Well, there's a lot in that. Chapter 1 of Exodus and the first 10 verses of chapter 2. I want to talk about women. When I was a teenager, I talked about girls a lot. Us boys, we talked about girls a lot. And I've always liked girls and women. Because that's how God made us, all right? I want to just talk a little bit about what it meant to be Eve, to get us started. So let's deal with women as the unhired help. The first appearance of a woman in the Bible, of course, is in Genesis 1, 26 to 28. And then the creation of Eve is described in Genesis 2. The King James Version, verse 18, says this, "And the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make an help meet for him." The New King James Version and many others say this, "And the Lord said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him." Now, down through the ages, we've tended to focus on the idea of the helper who is subordinate to the man. But in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. The Hebrew word, which is translated help in the King James Version, is Ezer or Azer, E-Z-E-R, and it's used 19 times in the Old Testament. Almost all of the references are to God. In all 19 instances, the one who helps is strong, never inferior, nor subordinate. Strong, never inferior or subordinate. And the Hebrew word translated meet literally means the opposite, or according to the opposite of him. Some authorities say it signifies completion. You see, when God said it is not good that the man should be alone, that was an emphatic statement. Wasn't God just saying, the bloke down there, he's a bit lonely. I should give him a woman. See, this is quite interesting, because at the end of creation, what did God say? He said, it is good, very good. Right? Everything he created, he said, it is good, very good. Then here he said, it is not good. It is not good that the man should be alone. Why is that? Because the man on his own was incomplete. God saw that the man needed a strong, equal, completer. That's why we must never, ever cancel women. Mind you, we're canceling men as well, but that's a topic for another day. Now listen, the cancellation of women can be very subtle. If we go to the next slide, Mark, let's deal with women as superheroes. Now, me being an academic, I did a little bit of research to find out who were the most popular female superheroes, and I found a list of five. The most popular, the Scarlet Witch. Then, Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, not the blokey Danvers. Wonder Woman, the Black Widow, and the She-Hulk. Now, forget about whether they're good or bad. One of the things that really stands out about them is no woman could ever do what they do. Absolutely, utterly impossible. Mind you, the men couldn't do what the male superheroes do either. But portraying women this way, like we kind of know it's fantasy, but what's happening a lot in a lot of the movies is that men are becoming subordinate to women. And Jeanette and I, we watch a few series, usually on Amazon Prime, and we kind of like spy movies and that sort of thing. And I've noticed that a lot of them now, right, the hero or heroine, really, they don't call them heroine anymore, they call them heroes. They want to get rid of all that discriminatory language. But look, they do stuff it would be utterly impossible for a woman to do. So we're getting this image of women that they can never, ever fulfill. But guess what? Almost always it's based on their physical ability. The Bible actually says the woman is the weaker sex, meaning the woman is physically not as strong as the man. That's true. That doesn't make her inferior, doesn't make her subordinate, it doesn't make her any less the completer, that transposes the not good into good. I should just sit back and, you know, relax and enjoy these movies, but I can't help analysing them from the perspective of what it means to be a woman biblically. Now, I want to tell you what, none of them are heroes. Most of them are flawed characters, one, because they represent woman as woman can never be. But I want to focus on some truly heroic women. And these women don't always get a real good or really fair hearing, even from the pulpit. But I got a great book. This I thoroughly recommend this book. It's actually about 50 years old now. All the Women of the Bible. This book discusses over 400 women whose stories appear in the Bible. Now, many of them are not named, and that's also true for men. But it's a really excellent book. This guy, Herbert Lockyer, he died in 1984, but he wrote a whole series of books, including all the apostles in the Bible, all the parables in the Bible, all the women in the Bible, and there are a few others in the series as well. And I've used this as my primary source of reference, but two or three others as well. Now, in that Bible passage that we read out, Exodus 1:1 to 2, verse 6, I think I said verse 10 earlier, verse 6, there are five, and if I get time, I want to talk about a sixth, women who are actually responsible for saving Israel. And I tell you what, although these women might not have been as strong as men physically, these would be among the most courageous women in the whole of human history. And I want to talk a little bit about their stories. These women are Shifra and Pua, plus the 500 or so midwives whom they led in Egypt, Jochebed, the mother of Moses, Pharaoh's daughter, who is never named in the Bible, and Miriam, who was Moses' older sister. So let me say something now about Shifra and Pua. They were midwives. Now, some authorities, including some rabbis, say they were Hebrews. But other authorities are not so sure. Herbert Lockyer is one. He says they were Egyptians. Some other authorities I've read say that they were probably Hyksos people whose ancestors had migrated from Asia into Egypt. And they say this based on their names. Their names were not Hebrew names. Now, they'd been appointed to high office by Pharaoh, and their job was to act as midwives to the Hebrew women. Now, there were about 500 midwives who were under their authority, given that there were at least 2 million Jews or Hebrews, as they were known at the time. 502 midwives wouldn't be enough to go around. So in all likelihood, it was only the elite among the Hebrews who could pay for the services of the midwives. Now, the Bible records that they feared God. So these non-Hebrew women had observed the Hebrew people. They most probably had developed some relationships with some of the, at least the elite, Hebrew families. And they had come to know the God of Israel. When Pharaoh, who had no knowledge of what Joseph had done for Egypt, when he came to power, he observed that the population of Hebrews was growing, and he feared that they would take over control of Egypt. So he thought, righto, well, let all the girls live, and you know why, don't you? Because you know what happens to female slaves, right? He wanted the girls to live. By the way, one of the reasons why in the Ten Commandments God tells blokes not to covet their neighbour's wife is because they'd come out of slavery and a female slave could be used by any Egyptian man. So when God set up Israel as a nation, he said, no way, don't do what the Egyptians did. You don't touch another man's wife. So the Pharaoh reckoned it was okay for the girls to survive, but they had to throw the boy babies into the Nile where they'd be eaten by crocodiles. And there were also fish in there that would eat human flesh. At the risk of their lives, Shifra and Puah defied Pharaoh. Not only that, these women must have been quite outstanding leaders. And I've never seen them in a leadership book. They must have been quite outstanding. You know why? Because the 500 midwives under them followed their leadership. None of them was prepared to murder a Hebrew baby. And when Pharaoh found out, they told a half-truth. And actually, God let them get away with that, by the way, because he blessed them with a house and a family later on. They said, well, the thing is, these Hebrew women, they have their babies so quickly, you know, we can't get there to do our job. Can you imagine? See, Pharaoh was godlike in his authority. He wasn't God. They believed Pharaoh was God, but he wasn't God. But he could have just said, kill him, right? I mean, this is not like us writing a letter to our local MP saying we don't like the fact that you voted for the euthanasia legislation or the birth certificate legislation. It's not like that. You go to Pharaoh, he could easily say, execute them, just like that. So they go to Pharaoh and they tell a bit of a porky and he kind of accepts it. But then, of course, he reissues this edict to kill all the boy babies. And this is where Jochebed comes into the story. She's the mother of Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. And Moses was the third born. Now, when this edict from Pharaoh was, as it were, reissued, she was pregnant with Moses. And when he was born, she recognized that there was something on his life and she needed to protect him. So she managed to hide him for 3 months. Now, obviously, he'd be a suckling baby, so she'd be breastfeeding him. Goodness only knows how many times each day. He'd be crying. He'd be pooing his pants. Somehow or other, she managed to cover all that up and didn't come to the notice of the authorities. That takes a lot of courage. That takes a lot more courage than cancelling women. Now, when he was 3 months old, she realised it was going to be pretty difficult to hide him any longer. So she made a little reed ark, a mini ark, if you like. Now, the reason why she made it out of reeds was there was a belief that the reeds that grew on the banks of the Nile in that shallow water on the edges of the river, they would protect somebody against the crocodiles who lived in the Nile River. So she made a little reed basket or a mini ark. She lined the inside with clay and the outside with pitch or tar that would have made it waterproof. She hid him in it and put him by the side of the river. Now a little later, we learn, of course, that she became the paid wet nurse for Moses until he was weaning age, when he went to live with the daughter of Pharaoh. As a mother, she gave up Moses, knowing that there was something on his life. She let him go. We don't know whether he had any contact with her after that. What kind of courage does that take? Courageous woman. Let me talk about Pharaoh's daughter. And again, we see very little written or preached about Pharaoh's daughter. Now, the version of the Bible that we had up on the screen a little earlier was the contemporary English version, which talks about one of the daughters. It actually says one of the daughters of Pharaoh. Most translations say the daughter of Pharaoh. She may well have been an only daughter. It's also possible that she had converted to the Hebrew faith. Now, there are a number of reasons why we say this. One is that she went down to the river to wash or to bathe. She kept her attendants away from her when she did that. Now, although the law hadn't yet been established, that the law concerning, you know, ritual bathing after menstruation and so on, some authorities believe that she was following the practice of the Hebrew women. And that was why she had her maidservant sort of wait back. The other piece of evidence is she recognized Moses as a Hebrew baby. And she would have known what her father had ordered. So to be obedient and honoring to her father, she should have actually herself picked up that baby and thrown him in the river to be eaten by crocodiles, but she didn't. What a risk this courageous woman took. She made the decision to rescue this child. And she brought him up in the royal palace as if he was her own son. Now, as he grew, it would have become pretty obvious to the courtiers that he was a Hebrew. I would surmise that she risked death daily, literally, because she was raising a Hebrew child as her own son, and yet she did it. She would have had to defend herself against jealous courtiers on a literally daily basis. Moses lived with her for 40 years. She did this for 40 years. How many do you know who was stuck to something for 40 years when it cost them every single day? This is a woman, a real woman, an Ezer woman, strong, in no way inferior nor subordinate. There's another woman, Miriam, the older sister of Moses. She was another who had the courage to risk her life. Unless she was personally known to Pharaoh's daughter, and there's no evidence that this was the case, she risked her life by coming out from the reeds on the edge of the river and asking Pharaoh's daughter if she needed a nurse for the baby. She would have been no older than 12 years. She may have been as young as 10. She had the presence of mind and the courage to come forward at the risk of her life. And provide the means for Jochebed to nurse him until weaning age, which I guess might have been 6 months or a year or something like that. Of course, later on, Miriam was the first poetess ever recorded in the Bible. I should have checked this, but I do believe hers is the first psalm ever recorded after Israel crossed the Red Sea. And she was like the lead singer, the boss, right? There would have been perhaps 3 million people in total who fled Egypt. And she was like the boss singer, the boss worship leader for the whole nation. Now later she did become bitter and twisted, and she spoke out against Moses. She kind of blotted her copybook later in life. Maybe she was jealous. Apparently she was never married. And she may well have been jealous, particularly of Moses' second wife. And by the way, he didn't marry Hebrews. He married foreigners. But we don't really necessarily know why she turned against him. And then, of course, remember, she got leprosy, so she had to be outside the camp. And then not long after that, she died. But when she was a tiny child, 10 or 12 years of age, she exhibited unbelievable presence of mind and courage. That's why, if I were you, I wouldn't cancel women. Because God created women. Man is incomplete without a strong, never inferior and never subordinate woman. I want to talk for a moment or two about another woman, and her name is Zipporah. She was the first wife of Moses, a Midianite. You know, she didn't want Moses' children to be circumcised. She thought it was a barbaric practice. So she risked the... Remember, Moses is the head honcho. He becomes the head honcho of Israel, right? She didn't believe in circumcision, but guess who circumcised his first son in the end? It was Zipporah, right? She went against her beliefs, the practices of her people, to follow God's law. Right? She made a sacrifice. In fact, she risked the ire of Moses. Some authorities say that, you know, that when Moses married Zipporah, she made a promise to her father that the boys would not be circumcised. So when she finally circumcised the eldest herself, she risked the ire of Moses. And there's some evidence, if you read the biblical text, that that didn't do their marriage a lot of good. So she actually paid a price for it. And I think she's a woman who's worth honouring as we consider women today. Zipporah, Miriam, Jochebed, Shifar, and Puah. Their courage, very rare do we see it today. I've seen very little written about these women, much less have I heard them feature in a sermon. All I can say is, dear wokists, if I were you, I wouldn't cancel women. Women matter to God, and women feature substantially in the story of God that we read in the Bible. Moses, of course, went on to lead Israel out of slavery. Do you know, as he was being brought up in the royal palace, he would have become one of the most educated young men in the kingdom. Not only would he have learnt reading and writing, the Egyptians were world leaders at that time in things like geometry, astronomy, and mathematics. Much of the Egyptian law that existed at the time is reflected in the law which we read in Deuteronomy, Leviticus, and also in Exodus. He was a learned man. He got his education outside of Israel, in the palace of the Pharaoh of Egypt, who had forgotten all about what Joseph had done, or what God had done through Joseph for Egypt years and years before. Pharaoh's daughter, she should be one of the heroes of the faith. Father, thank you so much for your wonderful word. Thank you, Lord, that you declared that it is not good that the man should be alone. You brought him a helpmeet, someone strong, never inferior and never subordinate, but someone who could complete him. And together they became co-creators and co-stewards with you of all that you had made. Father, we honour the women that we've spoken about today, and we honour all women because you made them, you care about them, and you have a purpose and a destiny for every one.